fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Insight Fire Training, LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighting cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2019 Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training, LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training, LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com, your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, 2019 will be the year to do it. Here's their upcoming schedule. January 10th, Tactical TIC Training with Max Firebox at Oak Grove Volunteer Fire Department. February 2nd, the 2019 Midwinter's Chiefs Conference Tactical Thermal Imaging Lecture. February 6th through the 8th, the Texas Association of Fire Educators with Sean Blomaker of Max Firebox. More details to follow. February 12th, Tactical Thermal Imaging, Enhancing Fireground Strategies and Tactics, sponsored by FD Tactics Training. Details to follow. February 28th, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's the Max Firebox Burn and Learn Thermal Imaging Training at Mount Pleasant Volunteer Fire Department in North Carolina with instructors Terrence Shoemate and Thomas Anderson. Details to follow. March 6th through the 9th, the Louisiana Instructors and Firefighters Training Conference. Registration open November 1st. Brotherhood on the Bayou will host some amazing fire service leaders, Mike Dugan, Mark Von Appen, Sean Blomaker, and Andy of Max Firebox and KTF. Don't miss this one. We will be teaching 7 4-hour sessions from 6th to the 9th. April 9th through the 13th at FDIC 2019, a general conference presentation that will cover the often confusing and complex areas of thermal imaging from purchasing to policy. This is not a sales presentation. It is an educational program that is designed to assist firefighters in understanding the specifications of fire service thermal imaging camera and how that will affect their ability to perform on the fire ground. May 10th through 12th, the West Virginia Public Safety Expo. Insight Training will conduct an 8-hour live fire training event where students will compete various scenario objectives. July 2019, the TEX 2019. Details to follow. August, the North Carolina SAFRE Conference in Raleigh. Live fire, 8-hour tactical TIC training, tentative. And December 19th, Springfield, Ohio, IAFF Firefighters Conference, tentative. Remember, Insight Training, LLC, your best bet for TIC training. we want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great promotional partners, the Firehouse Tribune. The Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on duty and off, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 5 Alarm Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. I'm your host, Steve Green, and we're very happy to have you join us again. We hope you are all well and getting ready to celebrate the next batch of holidays that are coming our way. I'd like to remind you that you can find all our podcasts on our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv. And you can also listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and probably your favorite podcast aggregator. When you visit our homepage, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. No, we don't send spam. We only send them out every couple of weeks. And you'll be the first to know about what's breaking at Dalmat Prod and on our website and on the latest news from the podcast. If you listen to us via iTunes, please, please, please give us 5 stars. Not only will that help us on iTunes, but it will help other people looking for 5 Alarm Task Force to find us more quickly. And it is that holiday time and you're looking to split your money. How do I give money to a good cause? And yet, how do I buy some gifts for people I care about? Well, you can do that at our storefront from our friends at Teespring. Just head over to bit.ly/DalmatStore, all one word with a capital D and a capital S. And you can choose from several t-shirts or mugs. And remember that a portion of the net proceeds goes to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And we are happy to welcome back a guest today who's been with us before, had some really good comments after the last show, and that's Assistant Chief Steve Przybarowski. He is a deputy chief with the Santa Clara County Fire Department in Northern California and has been in the fire service for about 26 years. He is also an instructor for the Shabbat College Fire Technology Program, as well as a contributing editor for both Firehouse Magazine and Fire Nuggets. Steve was named the 2008 California Fire Instructor of the Year and has a passion for helping others get hired, stay hired, get promoted, and for goodness sakes, stay promoted. Steve has had almost 200 articles published in all of the major fire service publications and is a regular presenter at fire service events and fire departments across the country. Feel free to visit his website at www.code3firetraining.com for more information, including valuable career development information and inspiration, too. And towards the end of the podcast, we'll give you his other contact information. But, Chief, welcome to the show. We're very happy to have you back with us.
Thank you, Steve. Honored to be back. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And you chose a great topic today, and that is courage under fire. But some people in the fire service may think we're going to be talking about something else. But you're going to be talking about how to be the best officer you can be.
I think that's the key is, you know, courage. It takes courage to be a firefighter. You look at those individuals around the country, whether they're from career departments, volunteer, combination, regardless of the type of department, when someone joins the fire service and wants to be part of the team, they're doing it for usually a number of reasons. A lot of times it's to fight fire and save lives, which I totally can appreciate and get. A lot of people want to give back to their community, be able to do the right thing, help others, all good, noble things. But regardless of your reason of why you want to be a firefighter, especially a fire officer, if you take that or you make the decision to step up and promote and get into the fire officer ranks, I think it really takes courage. And when I talk courage, it's not just courage to go into a burning building most normal people, as we know, when a building is on fire, want to leave, and we're the one oddballs, and I say that in a sincere way, we want to go in and do what we can to help stop the fire, help prevent further damage, help obviously save lives and property when we're doing that. So
sure.
Courage, yes, but if we look at nationwide, based on our run statistics, in pretty much big cities, small cities, towns, villages, doesn't matter what size, fires typically make up less than 10% of our responses. I mean, a lot of departments is less than 5%. So, yes, you have to have courage as an officer to do those, I don't want to say heroic things, because heroic is, this is what we signed up to do. This is the job that we do,
right.
And we shouldn't necessarily be heroes, per se. Heroes, to me, are the people that don't do our job for a living and make those leaps and those things that are not normal for them and help someone else make their day better. But courage to do the right thing on a daily basis. And, you know, if you look around the country, whether it's social media or news channels, the internet, you see a leadership crisis. I think maybe that's the fun thing or the hot topic that everyone loves, you know, bash others about. And it's not just the fire service, it's governmental industries in general, private industry. It's just the world. Everyone wants to bash the leaders. Everyone thinks they can do a better job.
Right.
And I get it. It's obviously a topic to talk about. And it's something that's very polarizing when you talk to others about how poor the leadership is at whatever level. Well, courage to lead, especially in the fire service, I think is a big issue in the year 2018, if not beyond. One of the recent tweets that I sent out, just I had some inspirations this weekend, and, you know, I think it really takes courage, not just to be a firefighter, but it takes a courage to be any rank in the fire service, company officer, chief officer, fire chief, the higher up you go, it takes courage, because everyone's out to get us. I mean, especially with social media so relevant and so available for the keyboard commandos to just start firing away, thinking they could have done a better job or wanting to Monday morning quarterback you. You got to have thick skin.
Right.
One of the tweets that I put together was titled, Signs You May Be Ready for a Leadership Role. And I didn't want to be negative by saying you may not be ready, but signs you may be ready for a leadership role, because a lot of people think it's easy to be a boss. And I say a boss just in general, but a boss is supposed to be a leader. Supervisor, manager, leader, but signs you may be ready for a leadership role. And the five items are, and I just want to discuss these because I think they're relevant to the scope of what we're going to talk about this morning, or actually today. The first sign that you may be ready for a leadership role is that you actually want to be part of the solution. You know, and I'll touch on that in a little bit. So you want to be part of the solution is number one. Number two, you're not overwhelmed in your current spot. And I say overwhelmed, it's because it's a very common thing to hear people of all ranks say they're busy and they're overwhelmed. And okay, well, if you're overwhelmed now, it's not going to get easier the higher up you go in the ranks.
Right.
Number three, that you want to put service above self. It's very important to realize, especially in the fire service or any industry, that service comes before self. And the fourth item that may be a reason that you're ready for a leadership role or a higher leadership role, if you currently are a leader, is that you're willing to make decisions. Wrong, right, just you're willing to make decisions. Not making a decision is obviously making a decision, but it doesn't usually get us anywhere. There's a time and a place sometimes for not making a decision. I'll talk more about that a little bit. And then the fifth item that, or the fifth sign that you may be ready for a leadership role is that you're able to tolerate conflict, and you also know that some may not like you for what you stand for or that you do. So those five items I just want to touch on a little bit in depth, because I really think it ties into, you know, the courage under fire to be the best fire officer and leader that you can be. So back to number one, that you want to be part of the solution. It's very easy in today's world to critique, question, second guess, Monday morning quarterback, everybody. And in some ways, it's the cool thing to do around the kitchen table. You know, it's like, you know, hey, that was, you know, I would have done it differently, or why did they do it this way? And it's very easy to be negative. But the tough part is true leadership is not being negative. True leadership is willing to say, hey, you know what? We're not here to second guess from Monday morning quarterback. We're here to learn from things. Let's, you know, it's good to learn from history so we don't allow history to repeat itself. But more importantly, let's try to twist this in a positive way. So being part of the solution is tough. It's very easy for many people to walk into their boss's office and, so to speak, pull the pin on the grenade and then sort of throw the grenade in the boss's office, then run away and, in essence, basically say, hey, boss, I got a problem, or I see a problem. Here you go. Deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's the easy thing to do. But the good bosses, the good leaders are willing to say, hey, come back here. I appreciate you telling me if there's a problem here, but don't expect me to solve all the problems in the world because I've already got my own set of issues to deal with and, you know, duties to deal with. You're going to be part of the solution. You're going to help me see this through. And that's where I think a lot of people fail at is they – it's easy to come up with problems, you know, the old Homeland Security saying, you know, if you see something, say something, you know, mm-hmm. Well, that's great. But how about doing something? And obviously, depending on the rank that you're at, maybe let's say you're a probationary firefighter, or even just a firefighter, there's only so much you can do. And yes, you got to maybe let your boss know about an issue. But more importantly, help me through this thing here, you know, help us through. So you got to be part of the solution. So if you're willing to take on being part of the solution, you're ready for a leadership role, because imagine yourself being a fire chief. The fire chief, if he or she has a staff of deputy chiefs, assistant chiefs, battalion chiefs, captains, all the way down, the last thing they want, I would think, is a, you know, battalion chief always coming up into the fire chief's office, hey, chief, we got this problem, and then leaving, you know. It's like, come on, dude, you're part of the problem here, but you're also part of the solution, so help us out. So you got to be part of the solution. The second sign that you may be ready for a leadership role, you're not overwhelmed in your current spot. It's amazing on a daily basis how much information, data, or whatever is thrown at any one of us in the world in general. I mean, if many people have more than one email account, some people are on social media, so imagine having a Facebook account, a Twitter account, an Instagram account, maybe a work email, a personal email, and then anything else that you come across on the internet, you come across from people, you know, talk at the kitchen table, at the water cooler, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It is amazing how many people I hear, especially at the lower ranks, that, oh my God, information overload because of, you know, emails. And you ask, hey, did you get a chance to read that email? I never got a reply from that. Oh, sorry, chief, I'm just too busy and overwhelmed and I get too many emails. And I sort of chuckle because I remember being a firefighter years ago and, you know, the 20, 30 or whatever emails I got a day at work, I thought were a lot. And most of them, you probably hit, but, you know, as we know, most of them, just like in your personal email, you can probably hit delete and you never know the difference, but there's some to take action on. Well, I've learned over the years that, you know, when someone at a lower rank mentions, wow, I get a lot of emails, it's like, hey, you know, have you talked to the fire chief lately? Why don't you go talk to the fire chief and, you know, five ranks above a firefighter, for example, and say, hey, let's ask him to see how many emails he gets a day. You know, instead of 20 or 30, he's probably getting 100 to 200 a day, because I know I'm getting probably 100 plus, which means higher up the chain of command, he's probably getting even more. And it's like, when people, it's amazing when I see people that take promotional exams and they get promoted, especially to leadership positions, not just company officer, but especially the higher up chief level positions. And I'm hearing them go, God, this is just overwhelming. I'm overloaded with all these emails, or I'm backlogged, or it's like, did you not sort of see this coming? I mean, it doesn't get easier the higher up we go. And especially if you're a good leader, you're going to have a lot of people wanting your time. I mean, if you're a terrible leader, it probably means that no one's reaching out to you to ask for advice or ask for guidance or ask for assistance. So it probably does make your life easy. But if you're a somewhat decent leader or trying to be a decent leader, you hopefully have folks that are reaching out to you to, you know, ask for your assistance or guidance. But the problem is, if you're not following through and you're not helping them out by answering the questions or guiding them in the right direction, you're actually hurting yourself, but more importantly, hurting them, because, you know, here you were supposedly trying to assist them in their career ventures or their daily duties. And if you're not helping them by responding to, you know, their communication to reach out to you, you're not helping yourself or them out. So if you're overwhelmed today, it doesn't get easier the higher up you go. I mean, it is amazing when I hear sometimes firefighters, and I say this in a sincere way, not to be disrespectful, but, wow, chief, I'm just overwhelmed with all the emails. I'm like, well, that's, you know, okay. And then they want to, in the next breath, hey, I want to take the captain's test. It's like, okay, well, with all due respect, if you're having trouble now managing your day, it doesn't get easier.
Right.
So I'm not saying I manage it well. I mean, there's every day where I know I can do a better job time management-wise or planning or organization-wise. And I know sometimes things fall through my off my radar screen. I mean, I'm human. We all make mistakes, but, you know, you got to know what you're getting into. So if you can handle what you're doing on a daily basis and you get an idea of what your boss maybe deals with, and you think you can maybe handle that, then you may be ready for that leadership role. So that was the second item. The third sign that you may be ready for a leadership role, you're willing to put service above self. It's easier said than done. I know a lot of people say they do this or they got in this line of work because they want to help people and they want to give back. All great things. Every human being should want to do that. But when it comes to really putting service above self, that's where the rubber meets the road. And it's interesting where a lot of people walk the walk. It should be talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk.
Mm-hmm.
We're public servants. I get it. But it's very easy to get into the self-preservation mode, especially sometimes if you're in a leadership role because you feel that everyone's always gunning for you or you're the target for everything. I mean, imagine being a fire chief in today's world or just any department head, police chief, fire chief, mayor, city council member, whoever it is, someone that's that high up the chain of command. You're in the line of fire on a daily basis, and it's tough, and you got to have thick skin, but you got to remember why we're in this role. We took the job, whether it was the first entry-level position or any promotion, to really serve others, not just serve the customers that are the taxpayers that pay for us to be here, but also those that are fortunate to be on the job with us,
right.
Those that are looking out for our leadership, and it has to be about them. And if we expect the customers to have the best service possible when the bell goes off, we have to make sure that we're doing our best so that we're in the best condition to, you know, put our happy face on and just be that best face of the agency or the organization.
Right.
And it's tough sometimes, but putting service above self just means always trying to do what's in the best interest of the department and not yourself. And that can be sometimes very painful, knowing that, you know, you may be taking a bullet, but it's in the best interest of the department for whatever reason that is.
Right. You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please do. I'm sorry. Good
job. I was just going to think, here in our county, here in South Florida, we have the county board, and every year they elect a mayor. So the mayor is more of a ceremonial post. But one of the most difficult jobs the mayor has to do is when we have a hurricane warning. And they open up the OEM, the Office of Emergency Management,
mm-hmm.
and the mayor becomes the spokesperson on the TV and on radio to the community for everything mm-hmm. that we're preparing for and expecting. Now, in here, although they were elected to their board position, they just were elected the mayor as it rotated through by their peers on that board. And so
mm-hmm.
these people are worried about their own homes, their families, et cetera. And they have to come out. And I will say that since we've been here for 99%, every mayor has done an excellent job under some of the most difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've dedicated themselves to what you just said, to being part of the solution in these first three, not being overwhelmed by the troubles, the tribulations of a given situation, and putting service above themselves, because they're out there in the public role, the public eye. But if you mm-hmm. If you got a peek behind the curtain, you would see that they're worried and communicating with their families about, you have everything ready there? Are you guys going to be safe? Do you have enough food? Do you have enough water? Because that's what they have to do. And I think what you've just said, just in those three, without touching on the last two yet, is a great example of what someone who may think they're cut out to be an officer because they're very popular,
mm-hmm.
they have to meet these minimal standards internally, not in front of everybody else. But they have to ask themselves when they stand in front of the mirror, because the mirror never lies. Do they? That's what my dad, may rest in peace, always taught me. He goes, mm-hmm. you can never lie to the guy in the mirror. Because he knows every single truth and every single secret that you have. So these three are so mm-hmm. so easily embodied in a volunteer mayor situation, as opposed to mm-hmm. a mayor who's elected in a big city or a big county, and they're out there to lead those areas. But when you're a counselor, one, I think it's seven board members, and then you get the one that the storm is coming to, well, the other three before you had no hurricanes, and all of a sudden you get the one that has its sights on South Florida. You got to clench it tight, and you got to be the one out there ready to talk to the public and keep them calm, cool, and safe. Mm-hmm. And safe.
So true. Well, and it's interesting because, you know, in Florida you have the hurricanes. Out in California we've got earthquakes, but especially wildfires that are just
absolutely.
I don't want to say unique to California, because it just seems like in the year 2018, it's not just California. It's a lot of the West Coast states and a lot of the other parts of the United States are actually getting more wildfires than we ever imagined years ago. And it Certainly. Doesn't seem to be getting any better. But tying that into the emergency management role or the leadership roles of a city, a jurisdiction, whatever you have you there, it gets extremely challenging because, you know, in those tough times of need where you've got a major disaster occurring or about to occur, and then you've got to try to communicate out to the community, it can be extremely challenging. And it's almost like a no-win situation of seeing some of the challenges that we've had up here in California. Cities, it seems like they're darned if they do and darned if they don't, only in the sense of they've got to try their best to help prepare the residents. The residents have to want to be prepared and have to want to help themselves, and that's a challenge sometimes.
Right.
So the cities are trying their best to try to help offer training in advance or preparation in advance. And then when the disasters hit, the cities are trying to do their best to not just mitigate the event, but, you know, with mutual aid coming in from other parts of the state and actually other states as well, you know, mutual aid to assist mitigate the event, also provide information about what's going on. And then when the whole thing is done, you know, trying to help the recovery process. And that's the time when people are the most fragile, because unfortunately many people have suffered major tragedies or major losses throughout this whatever disaster it was. And it can be very challenging on the leadership of a community, for example, and obviously the fire department's involved with that too, because they respond to it and they usually help out with that emergency management piece.
Right, very true. And of course we saw that just a month and a half ago with the Firefighters of Paradise and all the great CAL FIRE folks who just, mm-hmm. they sacrificed their own homes so they could go out and help other people. And it was just amazing to see their dedication and their perseverance in both up in the north in the Paradise area and then down in the Malibu and Venice area. How professional they were. And anybody in this country can look to the brave mm-hmm. men and women of CAL FIRE.
Yeah.
To see.
Well, and actually, mm-hmm.
you know, what it takes.
No, and not just CAL FIRE, because sadly, obviously, a lot of the CAL FIRE folks, and actually firefighters in general that fought the fires and lost their homes, which is, God, I couldn't even imagine having to have the stress of losing your house, but also now having to fight the incident and try to worry about your family. But, you know, CAL FIRE obviously makes up a chunk, but some of the statistics that are out there, at least for the fires up in, you know, Chico and Paradise area, you know, local government resources, meaning cities and county fire departments,
oh, sure.
my own, and we made up probably 70% of the responders up there. CAL FIRE usually is only about typically 30% of the responders, because they only have so many resources.
You know what? I apologize, because I meant CAL
no,
FIRE.
No, no, no apologies.
No, no,
no.
When I say CAL FIRE, I'm talking about how how CAL FIRE, everyone comes into it from all the other jurisdictions to work as a team to fight these fires. So it's all, like you said, it's the cities, it's the towns, it's not just the CAL FIRE organization. But I think maybe it's our fault here on the East Coast. When we see CAL FIRE, we see all these firefighters from the various jurisdictions. We see their trucks, their apparatus going by, and we say, oh, that's this town, that's this city, that's this community, this is this county. All these people are working under, quote unquote, the umbrella of California firefighting. I think that, so I excuse my slip of the tongue, as they say.
Don't even take it that way negatively, because it's like, ask me about what goes on in Florida or the East Coast, and I'm sort of a fish out of water as well, too. That's how we all learn from each other. But it's, you know, overall, the bigger picture, just, you know, it just takes leadership to, you know, fighting a fire is one thing. I mean, that's what we're here for. But trying to be able to do it professionally, well-trained, with compassion. You know, that's just the real deal that just, you know, it's, you know, just amazing to see all the things that go on and go from there. So now just two more items that I put on there, the signs that you may be ready for a leadership role. The number fourth item, you can make decisions. It was interesting. You know, we all think, oh, I can make a decision. Anyone says they can make a decision. Yeah, making a decision is one thing if you're figuring out what to have for lunch for the day or dinner. But, you know, and in the fire service, most of our decisions are pretty mundane decisions. I mean, you look at any firehouse across the country, especially for career departments, okay, there are some decisions that are pretty standard every day. You know, what's for lunch? What's for dinner? You know, what are we going to do today? And obviously we have, you know, maybe training to take care of or inspections or whatever it is. Obviously the bell goes off. I mean the tough decisions, the decisions that you're, if especially for your career, you're getting paid to do. And that's, it's easy doing the fun and game stuff, you know, the fun stuff, you know, like promoting people. And I remember a fire chief friend of mine from a neighboring department, he goes, being a fire chief's fun when you're hiring people and you're promoting people. Those are all the good times. Because it sure is not fun when you're the fire chief and you have to fire someone or you have to suspend someone or demote them. And he goes, oh, my God. It's like, well, yeah, boss, it's, you know, dude, it's the fun stuff is the fun stuff, but you're getting paid the big bucks to be the fire chief to also do not just the fun stuff, but the unfun stuff. And that's where a lot of, especially at the lower ranks of leadership, such as company officer ranks, I mean, granted, a company officer doesn't fire somebody or demote somebody, but they have to sometimes make some tough decisions. And you've got to be able to do that, because whenever you make a tough decision, you know there's going to be some people that don't care. There's going to be some people that are probably happy. And there's going to be some people that are miserable and maybe hate you. And that sort of ties into the next item there. But making decisions is critical. I recently participated in a fire chief recruitment process for a department. And I remember good friend of mine that works there, he goes, yeah, I'd love to have you be our fire chief and blah, blah, blah. And I go, yeah, I'd love to have the opportunity too. And I made the comments about, I go, any advice for me or anything else? You know, if I am fortunate to be the fire chief, you know, and it's funny because he goes, just one thing, Steve, he goes, the only advice I have for you is make decisions. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, make decisions. I go, that's pretty easy. He goes, no, it's not. He goes, unfortunately, he goes, that's the toughest thing that he had, I guess, had in his experience of fire chiefs. They don't want to make decisions. They want to make the easy decisions, but when it comes to the tough decisions, they don't want to make the decision because they feel that, well, I'll just put it off. Well, there's time and a place to not make a decision. I mean, you watch any good movie, for example, that has a good plot that relates to leadership or any good story. Sometimes it's okay to stand back and do nothing and watch and wait and see what happens. But there also is a time and a place that you got to make the decision. I mean, even if it's a bad decision, make a decision, because people are waiting. And I think that's the best advice I heard, because I've heard that more and more from people recently of their leaders, especially their top leaders, that just sort of sit on something because they don't want to, I guess, make because they know whatever decision they make, there's going to be a faction or a fraction that are happy with the decision. And there's going to be a fraction that are going to be unhappy. And the unhappy ones are usually the vocal ones.
Right, sure.
And I get it. Nobody wants to be unpopular or hated or not the liked or the cool kid anymore, but you got to make decisions. And the best advice I've seen and heard and more importantly experienced over the years is that when you have to make those tough decisions, I mean, you got to know that you're going to probably make, if you're lucky, you'll make 50.1% happy and you're going to make 49.9% angry, and that's fine. But at least when you make that decision, there'll be a period of time where they're angry at you, maybe vocally, maybe publicly. And you know what? It is what it is. But as time goes by, there'll be some other issue. It may blow over in a day or two or a week or two. It may blow over in a year or two or never. But you know what? Make the darn decision. Move on. If it is a decision that is not the best decision, you know, there's a time and a place to say, listen, I made the best decision as I thought was appropriate, given all the facts at that time. If I had a chance to do it over again, I would do it differently, or maybe do it this way. That's human. Or maybe there's a time to say, I'd make the same decision again, you know, given all the facts. But it's okay to say that make decisions, though. And then the last item that you need to be ready for a leadership role is that you can tolerate conflict and also knowing that some may not like you for what you stand for or do. And that sort of ties into some of the other items I previously touched on. Nobody likes conflict. Well, I mean, I think most people don't. Some people, I think, thrive on conflict, as we know. And, you know, that's okay. But you got to be able to tolerate conflict, but in a respectful, productive way. Not, I mean, I say some like tolerating conflict. I mean, you look at some on the social media or maybe some people in the world today, some leaders or maybe just some news people that we see in the news or whatever. Some of them obviously love conflict because it's, I guess it sells media or right. sells print. Well, there's not much print anymore, but it sells content, for example. And some people like to have conflict on social media because it stirs debate and it, you know, causes people to respond and share their voice of opinion one way or another. But as a leader, you got to be able to tolerate conflict, not let it get the best of you, but also not take it personal and also not thrive on it so much that it's actually negative and it makes things actually worse. And also, you got to know that some are not going to like you for what you stand for or do. I mean, we've all probably heard the phrase buddy to boss when you go from like the firefighter to the lieutenant or captain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you go sometimes captain to chief, it's almost like boss to the dark side because now you're one of them. And it's okay. I drank the Kool-Aid. I get it. The Kool-Aid's okay. It's not a bad thing. But you really get to test your true friendships, I guess, as you go higher in the ranks. Because I know a lot of fire officers don't want to make the tough decisions because they realize that some of their friends may not like them anymore. Well, there's your true test of friendship. When you're a leader and you can make decisions, and especially when you can discipline others, and your friends still like you, they're true friends. First of all, true friends don't put you in those positions.
Right.
But also, if you do, they can respect you afterward, off duty, on duty, and realize, you know what, you had a job to do. I get it. I may not like the outcome, but you know what, you did what you had to do, and let's move on from this. But you'll also find that sometimes when you make those tough decisions or you stand for those certain things that are hopefully in the best interest of the department and, more importantly, the best interest of the community, you know what? Some people may not like you, and some people may be butthurt over what happened, and that's okay. But it is sometimes lonely at the top, and the top doesn't have to be the fire chief. The top could be the battalion chief or even the captain if you're doing your job properly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating because we all want to be liked. We all want to be cool kids, I guess.
Absolutely.
I was never a cool kid in high school, and I get it. It was not fun, but you know what? It's not about being a cool kid if you want to be a good, solid leader. So really, those five signs the five signs that you may be ready for a leadership role, I think, are really key. And I'll just quickly summarize those so we can, I think, end this portion, because I think it's really a good way to maybe start out the conversation, but also end the conversation. So the five signs that you may be ready for a leadership role. Number one, you want to be part of the solution. Positive. Think positive. Number two, you're not overwhelmed in your current spot. You're ready to take on more. Number three, you put service above self. It's not about you. Number four, you can make decisions, good, bad, tough, easy. Number five, you can tolerate conflict, knowing that some may not like you for what you stand for or what you do, but at least you can go to sleep at night knowing that you did the right thing, given the facts you had, for those that are not just serving the community, but also in the community.
Great topic for this first section, and great five steps to consider, because like you said, everybody likes to be a leader when they think they deserve it, but sometimes once they're there, they just don't know how to act. And you made a great point, is that whether you make a good decision or bad decision, at least make a decision, because the one thing that can weaken you the most is a leader who is indecisive and can't mm-hmm. make the choice.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Okay. All right, so folks, we're going to be right back with Chief Steve Przybrowski right after these words. We're going to talk a little bit more about having courage under fire and not the kind of fire that you're thinking of. So we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned. No matter where we live or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief, wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your cool towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your cool towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make Cool Towel your answer to keeping cool. The tones sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on. You're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on. Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied you or teased you? Where did you most often turn to? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks like family illness, money, and job problems, and more. So where do we turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station house. You spend a lot of time with them, don't you? And most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy of your house of worship. But don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. This message is brought to you by this podcaster. He's been there and done it. Welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. And I'm back with my guest, returning guest, Chief Steve Pizborowski from Santa Clara County, California. A great instructor in the fire service, speaks all over the country at both the national conferences, at many departments, and an instructor and really a motivator. If you're looking, if you're an officer especially, from a line officer to a chief, and you're looking for motivation and how to look at your position as a leader, this is the gentleman who can help you with that. And in our first segment, Steve discussed the five steps of what it takes maybe to really be a leader, not necessarily what you think it is. And he couched that under the umbrella, courage under fire. And most people would have jumped to the conclusion, meaning, well, they had some really bad fires out there in California, must be talking about that. We barely touched on that. We're talking about being a good leader and being able to put up with all it takes to be a good leader. And now in this segment, Steve's going to add a little bit more flavor to those topics with a little bit more information about leadership. Steve, if you will, please.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve. Now, to tie into the previous items I talked about, especially courage under fire to be a, not just the best fire officer you can be, but the best leader you can be. And if you're a firefighter or engineer, I don't want you to tune out. I want you to stay focused, because firefighters and engineers can be just as much leaders as captains and battalion chiefs and fire chiefs can be. So we are all leaders, assuming we want to be, assuming we're willing to take it on. And we need that senior firefighter, not just the senior firefighter, but the junior firefighter can all be leaders as well. So what I want to touch on here is another tweet that I had shared this weekend, which was titled Five Keys to Increase Your Odds That Your Great Idea Will Be Successful. And I say great idea will be successful. As long as I've been in the fire service, I mean, I've known every firefighter at some point in their career to have a great idea. It's human nature. I mean, especially when you got the kitchen table, you got the firehouse, whether you're in the apparatus returning from a call, we've all got great ideas. Many sure. great ideas just stay at the kitchen table. Some of them just never even get out of people's mouths because they don't want to, I guess, share it, or they're too scared of sharing it, or they may be embarrassed. But there's a lot of great ideas out there. Well, some of those great ideas make it to actually reality, which is awesome. Some of them die on the vine for many reasons. And I just want to touch on that, because I do hear a lot of folks at, you know, departments around the country that are very frustrated with their leadership. And I hear people say, well, I had this great idea, but it got squashed down, or I had this great idea and nobody listened to me. I had this great idea, and blah, blah, blah. And I sense the frustration, the bitterness, and even worse, a lot of these people that have great ideas have actually shut down and just sort of circled the wagon, so to speak, and said, you know what? You know, forget everybody else. I'm not going to share my great ideas anymore. I'm just going to do my, you know, come to work, do my job, 8 to 8 out the gate, and to heck with everybody.
Right.
Well, you know what? If everyone had that attitude, I mean, we'd be in trouble. I mean, it's, you know, first of all, there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done, not to mention all the things we want to do and have to do. So five keys to increase the odds of your great idea being successful. And I'll touch on each right now briefly, and then I'll get into each of them. First of all, you got to have a vision. Even the best leaders have had their vision, and more importantly, don't just have a vision, share that vision and get others to buy into your vision. So have a vision, get others to buy into it. Number two, you got to take ownership now, but not just now, well into the future, long until after you're gone. And I'll talk about that, what that means. Number three, learn from history. Because chances are, you're probably not the first person with this great idea, this awesome idea. Somebody else has probably already come to the table and maybe been successful or not. So learn from the history before you start putting together your grandiose plan. Number four, build a succession plan. What that means is that build a plan to make sure that it's sustainable. And then lastly, number five, don't let no stop you. You know, there was one video on YouTube, I can't remember the exact title of it, but if you Google on YouTube, like Famous Failures, I think it's called, you look at some of the most, you know, Thomas Edison, Michael Jordan, athletes, scientists, there's many famous failures out there that people that were laughed at because of their great idea or their lack of supposed talent. I mean, you know, you hear stories of like the Beatles were told that they had zero talent and they right. would never be successful. Well, that's one person's opinion. Well, okay. How about the millions of others that bought their albums and, you know, went to their concerts and still love them to this day? So Famous Failures, I think, is a very good motivating, inspirational video. But don't let no stop you. So let me just touch on each of these things.
Okay.
Because I think it's critical that we all have ideas. I mean, so much can be done in any organization if we empower our personnel, empower our members. Now, I can't guarantee every great idea is going to be successful, because there's many great ideas that literally will die on the table because of maybe lack of funding. Sometimes it's not just funding. Sometimes it's just lack of opportunity. Maybe it's not a good time. And maybe we don't have the bandwidth to get it done. I mean, there's a lot of great ideas, but if we don't have the staff or you're not willing to take ownership, it's not going to happen. Maybe today. It doesn't mean it won't happen a year from now. But I think a wise battalion chief of ours used to tell me how change, you know, change meaning great ideas occurs. He goes, it takes a combination of these few items, not just all together, but sometimes one, sometimes two. But he goes, it takes a combination of timing. It takes sometimes a combination of money and smart people, not to mention the opportunity.
Right.
And sometimes those have to all line up. Sometimes it's just a combination of a few of those. But to get that great idea to increase your chances of success, you know, you got to have a vision. You know, great things start with a vision. And more importantly, that vision may be starting at the kitchen table. You know, get others to buy into it. Not everyone has to agree to it. Hopefully they're all saying great idea, and they're just trying to make you happy and feel good. But have a vision and get others to buy into it, especially if you can get people at not just your rank, but higher ranks to buy into it. But be careful, though. Don't just corner the fire chief one day and tell the fire chief your great vision, your great plan. And then, of course, he or she says, hey, it's a cool idea. And then next thing you know, you come back and say, hey, the fire chief loves it. And then you expect the fire chief to solve your problem. Well, first of all, most fire chiefs are good people persons, people, I guess. And they want to hear you out. They want to support you. And they're going to probably tell you a great idea. But don't let the great idea think that it's an affirmation that you've got the best thing since sliced bread. Realize that they're probably saying that to everybody. Don't take that negatively, but they want to be positive. They want to be encouraging. You still got to go through the process. But don't just say, well, the fire chief said it was cool. He's going to make it happen. No, there's more to the story than meets the eye there. But have a vision. Get others to buy into it. Because the more people you can get to buy into it, the more success you may have. Plus, you may find some champions that are willing to go to bat for you. That's why I'm a, you know, as deputy chief of training, I get great ideas all the time. And a lot of times it's like someone walks into the office or, you know, calls me or emails me. And it's almost like, hey, chief, got this great idea. And then they're like running as fast as they can out the door. And I'm like, whoa. It's like, I've already got a full plate here for 40 plus hours a week. I don't have time to take on new things. But if you want to put a proposal together, well, when you say the word proposal to anybody, usually that's the kiss of death, because most people usually say proposal. I don't want to. Well, first of all, I don't want to do that. How do I do that? I don't know how to do that. So we've tried to create a simple one-page, I think it's like about a one-page proposal form that just has basic key facts that help us make a decision as a command staff. It doesn't guarantee success, but at least it puts down the who, when, where, what, why.
Sure.
But we've tried to make it easy on people, because I don't want a 20-page proposal. You know, keep it short and sweet and give me an executive summary and, you know, a page or two at the most. But proposal usually is a bad word to most people. And I think it's a bad word because of history. A lot of times when people put proposals together, I think they fall on deaf ears. And then even worse, you submit a proposal, you put all this blood, sweat, and tears into it, you turn it into the chief, and you hear nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. And then it's like, hey, chief, what about that? Oh, what? Oh, I forgot about that, or that's still in my inbox, or that's still in my mail. And I think that is even worse, because then it's like, why did I waste my time trying to help better the department? And you didn't even give me at least the due diligence to say, hey, thank you. So proposals can be good if done correctly, but also more importantly, processed correctly by the leadership. So as a leader, you've got to be willing to push things back to individuals to make sure they're part of the solution, make sure they're willing to put together a proposal, because they have that vision. They hopefully have that support, but they've got to put it on paper. And you've got to do the due diligence to maybe at least try to have a good discussion at the appropriate level to hear it out, yes or no. And more importantly, close the loop with the individual and let them know that, hey, thank you, great idea, and we're going to move forward, but you still have a part in this. Or, you know, because of timing, or maybe because of funding, or because of maybe other work projects we have in place, this is not a good time to make this happen, but we're going to keep it on file, and maybe let's touch base maybe in 6 months or a year. The problem with that, though, is it's interesting that everyone wants to have their voice heard, which is awesome, but then when sometimes people don't get their voice heard, or it's not the answer they want to hear, then they almost as disappointed as they were if they were told, you know, if they heard nothing, and that's frustrating, too, even when we try to be transparent. So you got to have a vision. You got to have others buy into it. And that ties into number two, taking ownership now and well into the future. If you want to, use an example of a CPR instruction program. Let's say you have a passion that you think, hey, if we train all the members, all the community members, or as many as we can in CPR, we're going to help save lives.
Yeah, probably so. Well, you can't just throw that idea out there. Yeah, you can throw a proposal together, but your training division staff, I'll just use the example, or your EMS staff, if you have one, they've already got enough stuff on their plate. So if you want to have a CPR program for the community, you better be that point person. You better be the one that says, okay, hey, I'll put together a proposal, but also be the one that's going to be the point person. I'll be the point of contact when the public has any questions. I mean, because you got to think about any new idea that leads to a program is going to require sometimes funding, maybe a budget-related line item. It's going to require maintenance, maybe equipment. It's going to require maybe registration, CPR, for example. Well, okay, someone's going to need to register for classes, so who's going to do all that work? Who's going to worry about the budget, you know, for that? Who's going to worry about evaluations, getting instructors, getting classrooms? You know, there's all these moving parts that go along to it. And if I'm the training chief and you're expecting me to do all this work now, I mean, what's that going to do to my current workload? Something's going to get pushed to the side. And that's why prioritization is key. So if you're willing to take the ownership, I'll support the heck out of you. I'll even guide you and help point you in the right direction. But I also worry about not just 1 year, 2 years down the road. You're high and mighty to get promoted, for example, or do this good deed. But what happens in 3 years when you retire or you move on, you know, you get promoted again to another rank and you're no longer excited about this shiny, bright object that was in front of you. And you've, you know, That's where I see a lot of programs die, as we support programs. And then a year, two, 3 years, or sometimes 5 or 10 years into it, there's no love for it anymore because that person or that group of people are no longer there and they didn't build their team. So you got to take ownership now and in the future. I mean, and it's not just, okay, you retire 20 years from now, I don't expect you to still be involved, but hopefully you set your program up for success. And that's what I'll touch on with the fourth item, build a succession plan. Number three, you know, learn from history. And I say you're probably not the first with a great idea, but I love it when I hear people, yeah, I got the greatest idea. This is going to be blah, blah, blah. And it's like, do you honestly think that you're the first person that's ever thought of this? I love a good example of, and I was this, when I was a new battalion chief, we have monthly battalion chief meetings where all the battalion chiefs get together with the operations chief and just discuss operational issues to make sure we're on the same page. It's a great way to get the band together once a month to be consistent. Well, when I was a brand new battalion chief 12 years ago, give or take, I remember my first monthly operations meeting with all these battalion chiefs that I looked up to, and I remember going into that first battalion chief meeting with my list of problems of how I'm going to change the world and solve all the problems. And I remember going into that meeting saying, okay, this is screwed up and blah, 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 and we need to do this. And I was coming up with problems, not solutions, but I'm throwing all these things out there that this is all screwed up and this is, well, we got to fix this. And it was so funny because the senior battalion chief at the time calmly, coolly heard me out, very respectful. And he's like, okay, think about it. He goes, I've been a battalion chief for what I think it was like 17, 18, 19 years. He goes, you got a collective amount of experience in this room of battalion chiefs, so probably well over 100 years. He goes, don't you think somebody else has already thought of that idea years ago? And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, you're probably right. So he goes, of course, we've already thought of those ideas, basically stupid. And he goes, and basically his point to me was, everyone thinks they can change the world, but when you're in a position to start changing the world, before you start throwing things out on the table, learn from history, do some research, check your facts, because if I had done the time to talk to the other battalion chiefs beforehand, I would have realized, oh, that idea was already shared or discussed, but maybe the fire chief didn't like it at the time, or maybe the money wasn't there, or maybe the whatever wasn't there. It doesn't mean the idea is not good. It just means that if an idea was shot down a year ago because the current fire chief doesn't like it, well, odds are if the fire chief is still there in that position, don't waste your time because you're not going to change his or her mind. Wait till maybe he retires or
right.
Someone else, you know, moves on. So learning from history is just so critical because, again, you all think you all have the greatest ideas, but you're probably not the first one. So to make sure your plan is, I guess, rock solid or bulletproof, or at least you're prepared to handle some of those tough questions, learn from that history. Maybe you realize maybe not a good time to submit this. Maybe I'll hold off on this idea right now. So learn from history. And then the fourth item to increase your odds of your great idea is successful is build a succession plan. And that ties into taking ownership now and in the future. A succession plan means that You've built a bench strength. You've built a team. You might be that point person for this idea to see that CPR training for the community through. But you know what? You could drop dead tomorrow, God forbid. You could retire. You could promote. You could get disinterested in the program. But if you've got a cadre or team that are assisting you, you've got hopefully someone that you've been grooming, some mentoring. You've been training your replacement, for lack of a better term, because that way there's that sustainability piece. Because, again, all these great ideas are great until nobody likes it anymore. But as long as we keep sustaining it and it's important and it meets our mission statement and the vision of the department and our needs, build it and we'll continue supporting it.
Mm-hmm.
But the easier you can make it for your bosses, the easier you can make it for your bosses where you're not causing them extra work and you're not causing them maybe more angst or heartache, the more success that idea has. And the last item, don't let no stop you. You know, it's easy when you're being told yes, but when you're being told no, and nobody likes to hear no, and that's where I tied in earlier, is that hopefully if you are told no, you're told a reason why. You know, it's not the great time. Maybe the money isn't there right now. Maybe it's just not a, you know, it's not a priority right now, but don't give up. And that's where I see a lot of frustration, is a lot of people will just, they get frustrated when they hear no, and then they just stop. And I've heard people literally be told no for their idea, and they say, you know what, I'm not going to offer my idea anymore. It's almost like they're having a temper tantrum of, forget it, I'm not going to bother anymore, and to heck with the department. You know, I'm not going to share any ideas. Like, okay, well, guess what? You're thinking you're showing the department? Well, it's the other way around. Instead of the department losing out, you're actually losing out too. And the department is losing out if it was that great of an idea, but you got to be a team player. And you look at some of the most successful people, as I touched on earlier in this world, whether it's athletes, leaders, people in the private industry, people that work for the governmental industries, those most successful leaders didn't just take risks, but they were told no a lot. And they learned how to get around that to not let them hold them down. So if you're getting frustrated with one or two no's and rejections, you're probably not in a good position to be that leader, that idea person, that change agent, because you got to be able to be resilient. You got to be able to have thick skin. You can't take things personal, you know, and if, as much as you're frustrated with your idea, like I said, do some Google searches on those successful people in the world and you realize, wow, they had more adversity and rejection than I'll probably ever know in my life. So to cap those five key things to increase your odds of getting your great idea moved forward and made successful, number one, have a vision, get others to buy into it. Number two, take ownership now and well into the future. Number three, learn from history. Number four, build a succession plan, ensure it's sustainable. And number five, don't let no stop you. And I think if you use those five keys, your great idea or someone else's, and I think not just your great idea, but if for us that are leaders, when people come to us, if you're not having your folks come to you with great ideas, you got to look in the mirror, as you mentioned earlier, Steve, because maybe it's your leadership style or your lack of whatever it is when it comes to related to leadership ability. If people are coming to you with good ideas, that's a good thing. So these are maybe things that you can help train, educate, mentor them on, just if nothing else, to keep them engaged, keep them creative, keep them inspired, because it's amazing. If everyone in our organization just did a little bit more, God, we'd be, you know, there's so much we could do. But if everyone is not chipping in, it's, you know, just, you know, hey, we can be good or we can be great. And right. I prefer to be great. And the more we can get buy-in from our personnel and get them involved, the better off we're going to be.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. You know, from what you just said, all they have to do is watch a couple of old episodes of Shark Tank on TV and see the people who were turned down who have become very successful with their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Even though these five big multimillionaire investors didn't have an interest in it, they were tenacious, they stuck with it, they found somebody else who was interested, and their ideas got picked up, and they've made money, and they have it out to the public today, or whatever service they were trying to do. And they learn from exactly what you are teaching. Don't give up just because somebody says no the first time, and don't walk away from it like take your ball and go home to your house. Be strong. Be strong and say, I think this is a good idea. I'm going to do my very best to make it work. And if this department didn't like it, okay, maybe I'll bring it to somebody else as a concept. and going on. So I think it's a great idea, that, you know, great principle to live by if you want to make a contribution to improve a tool, to improve a methodology of doing something, to improve a tactic, to get just a new idea of how the department does something. Never be afraid to ask permission to sit down with your officer and say, I was thinking about this over the weekend and I made a couple of notes. I'd like to share them with you and see where you fall on it. Don't be afraid to do that.
Yeah.
I think it's a great advice in both segments today, Steve, that you're able to share with our guests and with our listeners. As you said, there is a lot of pressure on everyone today, from the new recruit, the rookie who's just starting out, to the 30-year chief of the department, because none of us know where the next shoe is going to fall.
And so
we need to be the most active, play the most active role we can, be the most interested that we can. As you and I talked in our very first interview, and we've talked through tweets, is the fact that if you want to be a leader, the first thing you have to have is that hunger for learning, that passion for learning more and improving yourself. If you don't have that, then you're not going to have that inner strength, that inner modality to let you create these ideas.
Yeah.
So you always have to be willing to be a student and always willing to learn. That's what I think the way we have to look at it.
So true.
Well, we really want to thank you, Steve, for, again, donating time out of a very busy schedule that I know you have. And I sincerely appreciate you sharing that with us today and with our guests. If you want to be in touch with Steve a little bit more and find out more about him and his abilities and what he shares with firefighters around the country. And it's so well said, the way he says he likes to help others get hired, stay hired, get promoted, and stay promoted. So you can find him at his website, code3firetraining, and that's three with a numeral three, code3firetraining.com. You can find him on Twitter at S, capital S as in Steve, and then PRZ. IB is in boy, OROWSKI, S. Przybarowski. And at Instagram, you can find his first name and last name together, Steve Przybarowski, again, PRZIBORWSKI. And Steve will be happy to get back to you, let you hear from him. And listen, just like he said, ask him about an idea you might have. Even he can give you maybe some direction for where you can go with it in your department and what to do. So he's always available. He's a great instructor. He's a great motivator. And he's always someone who will get back to you as soon as he possibly can. Steve, again, my sincere thanks for your time, your effort, your wisdom, and your sharing. We wish you and your family a very happy holiday season, and happy, healthy, and safe new year to come.
Thank you, Steve. I honestly appreciate the opportunity to have a good discussion with you in the last hour or so, and really appreciate anyone that takes the time to listen and just enjoy doing this type of stuff. So thanks again for the opportunity. Happy holidays as well to you and your family.
Thank you very much. Folks, we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned.
You are listening to 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders.
You're ready to call it a night. The kids are tucked in, the lights are out, and the dog's in the den. Seems all is calm. But stop, it's not all right. To keep you and your family safe in the event of a fire, we're advising you to close before you doze. Close your bedroom doors when you go to sleep. Why? Because closed doors dramatically decrease heat and carbon monoxide levels, which provide trapped occupants more time for help to arrive. And closed doors can slow the spread of the fire, increase oxygen levels, and decrease temperatures dramatically. You've invested in smoke, fire, and carbon monoxide detectors. You've even practiced Edith drills with your family. Now learn another important way to protect all of you. Close before you doze. Also remember, if you are able to escape, make sure the last one out closes the main door. Remember, close before you doze. This message is brought to you by the UL Fire Safety Team, closebeforeyoudoze.org, your local fire department, and this podcaster. Ho, ho, ho! It's that holiday time again when many of us are trying to stretch every dollar to both purchase gifts for those we love and contribute what we can to the needy. This year, why not accomplish both by visiting the 5 Alarm Task Force storefront with our friends from Teespring? Just head over to our site at http://bit.ly/Dalmat Store with a capital D, capital S, all one word, and choose from our several t-shirts, each with a different message on the back, or one of our emblazoned mugs. Both items come in multiple colors. The good folks at Teespring will wrap them all up and send it to the address of your choice. Once you've ordered your merchandise, you can be comforted by the thought that a portion of the net proceeds of all the merchandise sold is donated to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. This wonderful organization helps the families of those firefighters who have made the ultimate sacrifice. What a great way to spread some holiday joy for them. So purchase some sharp 5 Alarm Task Force gifts and help a very special charity as well. From all of us at 5 Alarm Task Force, have a safe and joyous holiday season. Have you ever thought about what brought you to the fire service? For some, it was our parents or grandparents. You know, a family thing. For others, it was the flashing red lights and that screaming siren. Me? I hadn't even thought about it. See, I planned on becoming a rabbi. A rabbi? That's right. But somewhere along the way to that goal, I wound up in bunker gear and riding a tailboard. Not only that, it happened with the fire department in the Southern Bible Belt. Sounds crazy, right? Well, if you like to read stories about the fire service and want to know how a kid from Boston wound up as a volunteer firefighter in North Carolina, pick up an electronic copy of my book, Fish Out of Water, Two Jewish Guys in a Deep South Fire Department, on Amazon. I tell my story of growing up and thinking I knew where I was going, but a turn of events brings me to North Carolina with a combination fire department just a mile down the road from my home. Stranger still is the fact that when being voted in, the guy I sat next to was also Jewish, and 40 years later, he's still my best friend and a business partner. Together, we share stories from being rookies to exciting calls, some firehouse fun, and difficult responses. Read about some tactics that were way ahead of their time and others that we probably never would use again. Just go to bit.ly/NC Firefighting, all one word. And remember, I'm sending proceeds from this book to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. Stay safe and enjoy the ride. Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You'll be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer, sure. It takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. And that wraps this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force. News and issues for today's first responders. We'd like to thank our guest, Deputy Chief Steve Przybrowski, for joining us to discuss courage on the fire, being the best officer you can be. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and most podcast streaming services? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsor, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2018 Great Florida Fire School.
If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we are bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter @dalmatprod or @cause_origin and on Facebook @dalmatprod or dalmatprodfire, and stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog at our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Till next time, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home.